cases there are similarities, but also great discrepancies. I mean, the issue of the upper chamber in the Zimbabwean parliament, it's clearly an issue that the Zimbabweans have to sort out themselves. And I don't think that you will find that the IPU will have any public or otherwise views on that. The issue of whether or not the opposition participates or not, and if they walk out from parliament, I mean, this is not something that is forbidden per se. This is part, as you call it, hardball, that you actually see, and you probably can witness this on occasion just about every corner of the globe. And what we find disturbing, and that we do dislike and we'll talk about and we speak up about, is when parliamentary immunities are lifted because of something like that. Parliamentary immunity is something that has been installed and it's been there for time immemorial, and it's really to protect the freedom of speech of an individual who is elected member of parliament. In other words, somebody who is elected to parliament should, A, not be held to account through the courts, the judicial systems, whatever, for voices spoken or votes emitted in parliament. And secondly, he should not be called before the courts unless his immunity has previously been lifted to parliament, and then only if there is a crime committed and that there are clear grounds that he has committed a crime. But as I said, boycotting parliament is not a crime. So I completely failed to understand how possibly the immunities could legally be lifted of these individuals.
Also, I understand in Ethiopia, the government, shortly after the elections in May, the opposition says that the government called the parliament together and changed some of the rules, for example, made it difficult now for parliament, especially with new members, to get involved in reviewing policy and raising taxes, setting taxes, and also change the rules in terms of changing the numbers of sponsors needed to introduce a topic for debate on the floor or within the chamber.
Not everything in politics is clean, and that is as true in the north as it is in the south. So clearly, majorities in parliament and elsewhere for that matter would always try to get away with as much as they can. But I said that is, unfortunately, or whichever way you want to look at it, that is part of politics. So I wouldn't necessarily say that this is something that we're going to point out, particularly a case of Ethiopia, and then we should really talk about a lot of countries.
Some observers have criticized African democracy or African efforts at democracy for falling short of the goal, while some ruling party supporters, for example, would say African democracy must take its own shape and cannot be modeled after some of the standards of Western democracies, for example. Do you agree with that, or again, is there a point where one can judge and say this simply may have the facade of a democracy, but it simply is not a functioning democratic system?
If you put this a little bit in perspective, you will find that Africa is doing rather well. I come originally from a country which is called Sweden, and a lot of people say that we have a very nice parliament today with a very vibrant, very strong parliament and with a very functioning democracy. But what most people tend to forget that in our country, which is a country with a very strong industrialized base and very strong economy, it took us over 100 years to get where we are today as far as the parliamentary institution is concerned. It didn't just happen overnight. In African countries, what we are talking about so far is a very, very short period of time and under much more difficult circumstances than the ones that my countrymen have faced. So if I put this a little bit in perspective, I would actually turn around and say, I think Africa is doing rather well. And I'm rather admirative of many African politicians and leaders. I mean, there are plenty of them that are doing an absolutely extraordinary job. It is true that there are also several examples of things are not going very well. And we do tend to focus on that. But we should not forget that, in fact, they are doing rather well under their very tough circumstances.
Are the challenges facing African parliaments and the executive branch, the tensions between them, are they very much different after the Cold War in recent years, where we've seen the democratic movement grow? Was it very much different from the problems faced by these democratic institutions which were inherited after independence? which in some cases were overthrown or turned into dictatorships.
I think that that these problems have probably become more acute now. We are living in a much more intense environment. We are living, the world and countries are facing very, very acute problems. There are huge problems of poverty and unemployment in many of these African countries. And what we are talking about in some of these instances, I mean, in the case of Zimbabwe is one, is where the authorities are simply unwilling to share power, although the opposition do account for a very, very large proportion of the population. And this is where we have difficulties, because what we see is that all kinds of attempts are made to justify repression of political dissent. And now they are resorting to legal mechanisms, lifting parliamentary immunities, prosecuting people. And this is really very worse. I mean, this we did not see to that extent at the former period right after decolonization.
How do you characterize the situation with the Zimbabwean parliament? What suggestions would you make to improve procedures there to make it more democratic?
Well, I think fundamentally what our Committee on the Human Rights of Parliamentarians has found is that there is a need to have a real dialogue between the opposition and the majority. There is this suspicion that we notice that because an opposition member is involved in something, many people in the majority believe that, oh, by definition, he's therefore guilty of conspiracy or something illegal, which is not true. He's just, or she is just being a politician exercising their political rights. There's a need for a lot more dialogue and people to understand that they have both a right to coexist, that they're both fighting for a prosperous Zimbabwe. They just are expounding different political ambitions. And that is very normal. If they could only just talk to each other more on a regular basis and be a little bit more respectful of each other, that would be a huge way to improve the situation in Zimbabwe.
Is there a movement underway, perhaps sponsored by the IPU in Zimbabwe and other places, to get the opposition and the ruling party members to speak to each other?
Yes, we do that. We do. We are right now meeting in an assembly here in Geneva, and a delegation composed of both members of the governing party and the opposition was announced to come here, and we were hoping that we would have a dialogue with them together to promote precisely this kind of understanding. And unfortunately, at the last moment, probably because of the crisis currently underway in the country, that delegation was canceled. But we are doing this, and we're doing it in several parts in Africa and in several parts of the in other regions.
Can you describe any, perhaps, models in Africa of parliaments working quite well, or parliaments that have gone down the road to reform and have vastly improved their performance, even in relation to the executive branch, perhaps, where there's a tug of war between parliaments pushing for greater influence over policy versus a very recalcitrant, maybe, ruling party or president?
One parliament that stands out in many ways is the South African parliament. The South Africans went through a reconciliation process. They had free and fair elections, and then they sat down together with representations from all factions and all parts of society, and they wrote a new constitution, which incidentally we contributed modestly to as well. But the parliamentary system that they have set up is one that is very, very innovative. And it is innovative in many regards. It is innovative in the way it tries to bring the parliament closer to the people and the people closer into parliament through a lot of public hearings, through a lot of fact-finding missions, and trying to make parliament a more vibrant institution. It is one of the parliaments that we use as a model also for the way it holds government to account. So, I mean, the parliament in South Africa is a very powerful institution. So that is one example where I think that they have done very well. But, you know, there are many parliaments and countries in Africa that have done very well for themselves in moving away from an authoritarian system into a more democratic system. In Benin, in West Africa, for example, you have had alternance between majority and opposition in several consecutive elections right now, and you have a parliament that is getting more and more stronger by the day. So there are several examples. Zimbabwe, incidentally, is a parliament that was one of the first to, amongst the English-speaking countries in the southern Africa, to start on a reform process. And I remember it's probably less than 10 years ago when the then Speaker of the Parliament, Mr. Ndebele, was in conflict with President Mugabe and stood up to him and defended the right of members of Parliament to speak out freely in Parliament and won. So there are many good examples, despite some of the shortcomings and some of the difficulties